All right, so some of you guys know me. I've done a few different things in my career. Primarily, I would call myself an accelerator physicist or an applied physicist. For the last 5.5 years, I've been working for Accuray, and we design and sell radiation therapy equipment. And what I'm going to say here is, this is my own talk and my own presentation. Hopefully, most of it is correct. Cancer is the leading cause of death worldwide. 40% of us in this room will be diagnosed with cancer. And there will be more than 1.7 million new cases in the U.S. annually. And men, if we live long enough, we will get prostate cancer. That's exciting. I did touch nothing. This big thing?
I think this power.
That might turn it back on based on other rooms I've been in.
It's on now. That was exciting.
No input signal.
This should be on.
What should be on?
I mean, maybe we blew a fuse or something.
Well, the screen went up. That was a motor, so the fuse is working.
The screen went blank and it went up.
Signal
to pull up the screen.
When it goes off, probably the screen goes up.
There is a string up there.
Oh,
that's a mic.
Well, the laptop is working. It shut off.
The projector shut off
and the screen went up.
Yeah, the whole power went off.
Excuse me.
I tried calling CTS saying they didn't answer.
No, no one's over there.
Oh, that woke it. Oh, try that. 5150.
Did we get logged out? Oh, look at that.
I didn't realize it had to be touched to come on. That's good.
Yes. Yeah,
good.
Someone hit exit or...
No one touched anything.
Nobody touched anything.
Then it just decided it needed a break.
Time out, I think.
All right.
How do we go play again?
Thank you so much.
Figure out how to play. That's it, I guess. All right. We're going.
Beautiful.
All right. As we were saying, men, if we live long enough, we will get prostate cancer. Two-thirds of cancer patients will have radiation therapy as part of their treatment, and 40% of those who are treated with radiation therapy will be cured. So, what is radiation therapy? It's non-invasive. It's painless like an x-ray. Typically, it's done in 15-minute treatments, roughly, for 5 days a week for 6 to 8 weeks. And usually, it's the most cost-effective way to attack cancer. This is a slide of cancer prevalence. The darker colors, there is higher prevalence of cancer. And they define prevalence, this is 5-year prevalence. That's defined as people alive today who've been diagnosed with cancer in the last 5 years. And if you look at the numbers, this is per 100,000 people. In the developed countries that are dark, it's more than 1,500. So that's more than 1.5% who are living today have been diagnosed with cancer in the last 5 years. That's US, Canada, Australia, Western Europe, Northern Europe.
So if I move to Namibia, I won't get cancer. That's quite what it was.
If you were born in one of these countries, you probably won't live long enough to get cancer.
Oh, okay.
And here's the cancer incidence. And you can see in North America, it's about evenly divided between prostate, breast, and what is the third one? Lung. Prostate, breast, and lung are all about equal. And then if you add colorectal cancer, you cover more than half of all the cancer cases. So that's the incidence of cancer. Now, the ones the mortality, a lot of people die of lung cancer. Lung cancer is hard to treat. But prostate cancer and breast cancer are pretty well treated. They're way down on the list of mortality. So what is cancer? It's an uncontrolled rapid cell division. That's the best I'm going to define. I'm a physicist, so when I say something wrong in biology, you guys can correct me. Denny can come to my rescue. What is radiation therapy? The therapeutic use of ionizing radiation. It kills cells or halts reproduction, and it does this through either direct damage to the DNA or indirect damage to the DNA due to producing free radicals that then go and attack the DNA in the cells. How did this all begin? X-rays were discovered in 1895 by Wilhelm Röntgen, and people were doing lots of experiments with cathode ray tubes. They basically took glass tubes with two electrodes in them, and usually the vacuum was poor, there was background gas, and they would pass electricity through here and they would glow. So people liked all these glowing tubes, kind of like a neon sign that you see today. And Röntgen discovered that there was some kind of radiation coming out of the tube that would fog film if you put it nearby, and it would still fog the film if you put a dark screen in front of it. And so he didn't know what these were. He called them X-rays, X for unknown. And he was awarded the first Nobel Prize ever given in physics in 1901, just 6 years after this discovery. Within 1 year of the discovery, people are already using X-rays for therapeutic treatment. And this is kind of amazing. They had no idea what X-rays were. They had no idea what electrons were. Electrons wouldn't be discovered till 1897. But they were using it for therapy. And in 1896, there are three people that are claimed to be the first one to do radiation therapy. It's hard to tell which one was really the first. Different authors claim each one is the first. But Leopold Freund, Victor Despenes, and Emil Grube all used radiation therapy to treat patients. They didn't really understand how any of this worked. And Grube would have lots of skin problems, skin cancer, because of all his experiments with radiation therapy. They had no sense of the safety precautions that were needed. And then also in 1896, radioactive materials were discovered. And Henri Becquerel discovered radioactivity in uranium salts. His student Marie Curie was able to purify that and figure out that it was polonium and radium that was responsible for the radioactivity. And she and her husband and Becquerel all shared the Nobel Prize in 1903. So this is radioactive materials. And radium was used for radiation therapy as well. It was used for therapy just a few years later after the discovery, about 3 years. 1901 was the first radium treatment. And Claudius Rigaud began using low dose rates and fractionated therapy. And that's what we use today. He found that instead of giving a dose as fast as you can, it was better to give the dose of radiation over time. And that allows the good tissue to repair the damage to the DNA. And so you can spare the good tissue, and the tumor gets killed, the good tissue repairs damage. The basic understanding I have of the biology is that it's easier to kill the cell while it's trying to divide the DNA, and if you screw up the DNA while it's dividing, the cell gets confused and it kills itself because the DNA strands don't match. And that's a physicist's view of how it works, so it might be wrong. But radium gradually declined due to cost. It was very expensive to get the radium. There are some other interesting uses for radium. a foot warmer for rural mail carriers, a jock strap for weak and sagging men, and it does affect that part of the body, but they had the sign wrong. Radium chocolates, radium lipstick, and radium water. Most of these were not too harmful because there was not very much radium in them. But the radium water killed at least one person. One rich industrialist started drinking 3 bottles of this a day, and he died a painful death of radium poisoning. Radium goes into your bones and it replaces calcium, so it stays there, and the bones get brittle and fall apart. So don't do that at home. X-ray therapy. Let's get back to the X-ray therapy. Before World War II, people were trying to get to higher voltages for the X-rays. And this Coolidge tube took the same idea as the tube that Röntgen had been using, but it added a heater on the filament, allowed a lot better current, a lot more dose. And then there were other experiments. The megavoltage X-ray, they finally got to 1,000,000 volts by using a Van de Graaff generator, and that was done here in the Harvard area. Robert Van de Graaff was on faculty at MIT, and he and his engineer, John Trump, designed this and put it in a hospital in Boston area. And John Trump, by the way, is the uncle of President Trump. And then after World War II, so World War II made a big change. World War II, people were focused on radar. And the radar systems enabled high-power microwaves. And that enabled microwave linear accelerators for electrons. And the first accelerator for therapy using these new microwave, high-power microwave systems was in England. The two powerhouses during World War II for radar were the UK and Stanford University. And that's where the two systems came out of for radiation therapy, the way we do it now with the electron linear accelerator. So these were traveling wave LINACs, and in 1953 in Hammersmith Hospital, London, and then 1956 at Stanford Lane Hospital in San Francisco. And that's, as I said, the dominant system today is RF linear accelerators. A few other developments. Neutron therapy began in 1938 with a 37-inch cyclotron at Berkeley. The betatron that Donald Kirst had invented was used for therapy just before in 1949, University of Illinois. He invented it before the war. It was first used for therapy in 49. Cobalt-60 started to be used in 1951, and that almost completely replaced radium. And proton therapy in 1954, and particle therapy with helium ions in 1957, both at Berkeley in the cyclotron. Modern medical LINACs for therapy look like this. Can I get some water? Yes. There's one in my bag there, on the side. Thanks, sorry. Sorry about that. The world leader in radiation therapy equipment is Varian, out of Palo Alto, California, and that's in the top left. The second biggest one is Elekta. It's a Scandinavian company, but they make their machines in the UK, what used to be Philips. And then our company is Accuray, and we make these two products. The two on the top are the more traditional methods with a big gantry that rotates around the patient. And the two that we have are niche market products, This one rotates around continually, sort of like an MRI machine. That's the Radixact or the tomotherapy. And the other one is on a robotic arm, and it steers around and shoots the tumor from different directions. So how does one of these RF linear accelerators work? You need four things. You need an RF or microwave power source, you need an electron source, you need to accelerate the electrons, and then you need to produce X-rays. The RF power use either a magnetron or a klystron. Those were both invented during World War II. Magnetron by the British, klystron by the Stanford folks. And we typically use 3 or 9 gigahertz, 1 to 6 megawatts of peak power. We pulse it and have 1 to 6 kilowatts of average power. We have a circulator to protect the power source. We have a linear accelerator. And we have an automatic frequency control that keeps everything locked together so it's on resonance. The power sources, here's a diagram of a magnetron. Electrons orbit in a uniform field with an external magnet, and those excite oscillations in resonant cavities, and you end up with a high power oscillator. A klystron is an amplifier rather than oscillator, and you put a small signal in, and that gets turned into density waves that end up making a large signal in an output cavity. So these are all kind of complicated, interesting things that we won't get into all the details, but they work quite well, and we can get many megawatts of power out of these type of devices. The electron source, or the electron gun as we call it, is fairly simple. We have a high voltage electrode, and electrons are emitted off of that. We often have a grid that controls the current of the electrons, and this is a picture of one of the electron guns that's often used. And you inject electrons down the accelerator. And the accelerator is made up of resonant cavities. And if you imagine a hollow pillbox cavity, it has electromagnetic standing wave modes. And you can work it out analytically what the modes are if you like Bessel functions. And for an accelerator, though, we change it a little. We put holes on the axis so the beam can go through. We put noses on the inside of the cavity, which helps to focus, concentrate the electric field. And then we round the outside corners to reduce the power loss. So we put that all together. What we do is we couple a number of cavities together. We don't just use a single cavity. We use a bunch of them in a string. And if you have N cavities, that gives you N different modes of oscillation you can have. If they're all tuned about the same frequency, you get coupled modes. And it's a nice big eigenvalue problem to solve. And you can figure out what those modes are. But we tune them typically to operate in what's called the pi over 2 mode. In that mode, you get a strong electric field in one cavity and none in the next, a strong field the opposite direction in the third cavity, and then none in the fourth. And it alternates like this. And then what you can do is take those intermediate cavities that have no field, make them smaller, shift them off to the side, and we have the structure that most manufacturers use for electron linear accelerator. You have high voltage, high power cavities on axis with small off-axis side cavities to couple the power. And if you tune this all correctly, it works quite well. And then you might wonder, how does electrons accelerate if it's all oscillating? It's sort of like surfing on a wave. They sit on the crest, or just ahead of the crest of the electric field, and the electrons get pushed along as the electric field moves through. And then there's lots of other interesting things to me as an accelerator designer that I won't get into, but you got to be careful how you make the length of these cavities so that you bunch the electrons up longitudinally, and you also focus them transversely, and you can't do both at the same time, so you have to kind of do one and then the other. And that's kind of all the trickery of making one of these things work. Well, what's it look like when it's done? This is a Varian system, one of the traditional gantry-mounted systems. You've got a long linear accelerator here, and out of the linear accelerator, the beam comes, it goes through a bending magnet, hits a target, makes radiation. And then the whole gantry can rotate around a patient that's on, who's on a couch. Here's one of our Accuray systems. This is our CyberKnife, the robotic one. And you can see the components here. Here we have a accelerator with no bending magnet. It just shoots straight into a target. And then we shape the beam with what's called a multi-leaf collimator. And all the other components are here. The magnetron that drives it, the circulator, and the electron gun.
What's the target?
I will get to that in just a second. Good question. What's the target? And right here. Next slide. So this is a simulation I did in Jayant. And if anybody is interested, you can get Jayant for free and play with it on your own computer. Jayant, this is the Linac and our CyberKnife. And we strike a tungsten target, and it makes radiation that kind of splatters all over, as you see. It has to be some high Z material, and tungsten is what's typically used, or a tungsten alloy. And what happens is a process known as Bremsstrahlung. The electrons, as they go past these heavy nuclei, get accelerated, get bent by the electric fields near the nucleus, and that produces braking radiation, or Bremsstrahlung. And this is on the right, you see a simulation of how many photons versus energy. So if I hit this target with a 6 MeV average electron beam, 6 million electron volts, and with a little bit of a spread, so the peak is 6.7, I get a big spread of photons coming out. So these are X-rays, different energy X-rays coming out of the end of this target. And a big broad spectrum. If you use cobalt, you get a nice double peak right around 1.25 MeV. But if you use electrons on a target, you get a big spread. And you might think that's bad, but it's not that bad because as this goes through tissue, it starts to fall off. And the way it falls off is fairly similar. And then what we do once we make this radiation is we shape it and collimate it. We use tungsten or lead to shape the beam. And so this is the same accelerator I showed, but now it has some shielding around it, and the beam is coming through. And then we have what's called this multi-leaf collimator. It's a bunch of leaves of tungsten that you can shape. So when you're shooting at a tumor, you can shape this to conform to the tumor. And in the example here, there's a big area that is probably not to conform to the tumor. It's probably to miss a critical organ like a spinal column or something. Now, if we look at how it falls off in tissue, in water or in tissue, the dose falls off with depth. And so say we want to hit a tumor that's 100 millimeters deep, 10 centimeters deep. You're only getting 60% of what you would get at 1.5 centimeters. So if you just try to shoot that tumor, you're going to get the tumor, but you're also going to dose everything ahead of it more than you dose the tumor. So how do you kill a tumor? What you do is you shoot from different directions. So this is a diagram showing seven ports, seven beam directions. And so this is a prostate treatment. With prostate, you try also to avoid exposure to the rectum and to the femur, the heads of the femurs. Those are a little more sensitive than other things. And so you tailor your dose. The example here shows just seven beams, but if you use some of the modern techniques, the Varian machines, and I think the Elekta can actually treat while they're moving in an arc, so you get a continuous arc rather than discrete positions. Our tomotherapy can treat all the way around 360. And so modern treatments can do quite well on sparing the good tissue and just hitting the bad. There's a bunch of other new techniques people talk about. The MLCs, multi-leaf collimators, let you do this conformal therapy. And then you can also change the beam intensity at different locations or even across the spot. And that's called IMRT, intensity modulated radiation therapy. And then image guided radiation therapy lets you actually move it with the patient, watch the patient breathing or something else and move the beam so that you're always hitting the tumor. Some new trends. People are always wanting better treatment plans, better imaging. And flash radiotherapy is a new thing, only 4 years old. First paper was in 2014. And it's found that a really high dose rate, 300 times the normal dose rate, can spare the good tissue better. And nobody understands why this works. So this is a good area of study for some of you biologists. Try to figure out why flash works. Try to figure out better radiosensitizers that sensitize the tumor to make it easier to kill or that protect the good tissue. And then particle therapy, just very briefly, is a new area people use with a photon beam like we get from the electron Linux. You have this kind of a depth dose that falls off with depth. If you use a proton beam, it goes in and dumps all its energy at one point called the Bragg peak. Usually you have to spread that out by various means, but it lets you spare tissue downstream, so you can shoot it toward a critical organ and avoid dose at the critical organ. So in summary, radiation therapy is beneficial in treating cancer. A number of disciplines come together for this: basic physics, applied physics, engineering, medical physics. New developments will continue to improve it, and this enables us, created in the image of God, to better exercise dominion over disease and helps to do it.
Thank you. Yeah. Does the tungsten target get destroyed over time?
It's not supposed to. But if you make the beam spot too small and put too much energy in each pulse, you can destroy the targets. And so you have to be careful of your spot size so you don't wreck the target.
Yeah, Gary. I've heard of a treatment called boron neutron capture therapy. Is this what you referred to in one of your slides of developed in 1937?
That wasn't quite BNCT. So BNCT is using neutrons, thermal neutrons, slow neutrons. And what you do is you dose a chemical with boron, and you hope that chemical goes to where the tumor is. And then you use thermal neutrons, and you activate the boron to make it radioactive and deliver the dose right where the tumor is.
Is that technique used very much? That, I know, specialized for certain brain tumors, right?
They have been researching BNCT for like 30 years. Or maybe more. The first experiments, those who were treated lived shorter than others, so they stopped it for a while. Then they figured out better chemistry. And now I think, like you say, it is good for some things that are hard to treat otherwise, like brain tumors.
It seems like the proton beam has a big advantage. Is it more expensive, or why is...
Yeah, so for a proton beam, you have to make a 250 MeV proton beam instead of a 6 MeV electron beam. The facilities are quite a bit bigger and more expensive. There's one over here at MGH, Mass General Hospital, that uses a cyclotron. And there's another one over in Loma Linda in California that uses a synchrotron developed at Fermilab. They're arguably better. However, usually you can't hit as many directions as something like our CyberKnife or the TomoTherapy or the Varian or Electa machines can shoot from a lot of directions. So they're better in some ways, but they're not quite as flexible in others. So
can you rotate the person?
I've when I was at Siemens, I wanted to put the person on a spit and spinning, but they wouldn't let me do that.
When you make improvements like different techniques to shape the beam or multiple beams or want to do this, is there a lot of regulatory control over this? Do you have to verify all this, or can you generally just make these improvements and use it?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Any substantial change to this stuff has to go through FDA approval. So all of this has to be approved by the FDA. Now, when we make improvements to the RF system, that doesn't, because we're not affecting it the way the beam hits the patient.
So is that a long process? Is there a long delay between making these improvements and really getting able to use it? Is that
yeah, usually FDA approval takes a few years. And it's not only FDA approval. We sell these machines worldwide, and we've taken like 2 years to get approval to sell some of these in China, and they're just very slow on their regulatory body. And things that are already approved in the U.S., and they know they've got a use case. They know they work.
Yeah. You know, most of the 401ks, they're not, you don't have to randomize trials to prove that. That's part of the controversy, I think, with the CyberKnife, which has been sold all over the world. And we have so many in this country compared to other countries that really has not been shown to be better by randomized trials, but it's a lot more expensive.
So the CyberKnife, the robotic one, is really designed to replace the Gamma Knife. It's really designed for what they call radiosurgery, where instead of spreading it out over weeks, you deliver the dose all at once, you define a tumor volume, you kill everything in that volume. So you're just hitting it hard once to kill the tumor and everything in it in a single treatment. That's the original use case, and they're expanding it a bit. I've seen different studies. I don't know efficacy of one versus another. The picture I showed of the seven different directions, that came from a woman's paper that she put up on the internet, and she compared that to the tomotherapy and to the arc therapy, and she decided they're all about equally effective.
Yeah. One quick comment I have to say,
yep. Any of the what?
Late complications of radiation therapy.
Right.
And of course, we've seen that in the heart in terms of coronary disease that's happened, in terms of constrictive pericarditis. Many years after a radiation project disease is needed. And I know that newer methods are better, but we still see, and then not to mention the secondary tumors that are sometimes related to radiation.
Yeah, I have seen some reports that there might be some radiation-induced cancers and tumors, but other things that I've looked at say that exposures below a certain level, there's no epidemiological evidence that of any danger of radiation below, I don't know, 1 rem or something.
Well, certainly people who've had cancer are predisposed to having another type of cancer later. And the chemotherapies are quite a
So I think the takeaway is if you're going to have treatment for cancer, or if some friend of yours is, check with all the different specialties. There's three specialties. There's radiation oncology, surgical oncology, and chemical oncology. And each one knows their own field and knows what their stuff is good for and knows what the complications are. And you have to interview them all. Don't just decide you're going to go one. Do your research and figure out what's best in your case. Every case is individual and different.
Well, thank you very much, Kevin.